1:15, having arrived, I'm going to call the House and Senate Tax Conference Committee on House File 991 to order. Welcome, everyone. Mr. Peterson, would you please take the roll?
Chair Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Marquardt present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Representative Herr.
Present.
Herr present. Representative Lisligard.
Present.
Lisligard present. Representative Joachim.
Present.
Joachim present. Chair Nelson.
Present.
Nelson present. Senator Bach.
Here.
Bach present. Senator Miller. Senator Rest.
Present.
Rest present. Senator Weber.
Present.
Weber present. Nine members present with a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. So today there's really no agenda. We do have two presentations, one from Commissioner Showalter of Minnesota Management and Budget, and one from Commissioner Doty of the Department of Revenue. And I know I've been kind of going back and forth, but I think we're going to start with Commissioner Showalter now. It sounds like he's going to be with us in a minute, and he has been double booked. So it's kind of going back and forth, but I think he's going to start here, and that's going to work the best. So we're going to have him talk about the interim final rule, especially as it deals with the offset provisions and the de minimis threshold, which is something we actually didn't talk about on Tuesday. And then we're going to ask Commissioner Doty to talk about an update on 2021 tax filing. So, and also the interim final rule has been shared with members, so you should have that. So, members, we're just going to wait for just, should be very, very shortly for Commissioner Showalter. And I think we need to start with him, and that'll work best with the schedule that he has. So we'll just, Madam Chair, we'll just briefly recess here. Well, not officially, but we'll just hold off here just a minute or so. Good afternoon, Commissioner Showalter. I know you are a busy man this afternoon and booked in a few places. So I've kind of given a little bit of an overview, and I'm just going to turn it over to you, Commissioner Showalter. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. Pleased to be back. And pleased to continue to try and understand the impact of the American Rescue Plan and really how that fits into the state finances. There was, as everyone I think knows well from our conversation the other day, there was an interim final rule that was issued this week. Minnesota, like other states, is grappling to try and figure out what it means. And we've made a little bit of progress. I probably, there's no way that I'm going to tell you I really understand everything yet. I don't think you're going to find any states that do. And I really do also commend that as we continue to explore it, we're using our national association. We had a great call yesterday with the National Association of State Budget Officers, which frankly scared us as much as it illuminated, because everyone's coming at this a little bit differently. But obviously the NCSL is going to be a great resource as well as we try to understand the specifics of what we have here. On the next slide, I'm just going to really just reiterate a couple of major points that we had discussed the other day, which is that eligible uses for ARPA are, at its simplest level, very broad and very straightforward. It's to respond to the impacts of the public health emergency, address negative economic impacts, serve those who are hardest hits, and pay for those who were in harm's way. How you do that, and what are the definitions and what are the lines that states and other units of government have to make sure that they don't cross in filling those eligible uses is a lot harder, and we're going to get into that in a sec. The ineligible uses, there were some things that were called out in specific, you know, like contributing to rainy day funds or funding on pension liabilities directly, no-nos. In part because the logic of the funding is for federal government to help states both provide some level of stimulus for the economy, and but especially to provide assistance to those who have been impacted. The next slide gets us into the next, and I think really what you had me back here for, which is the question of how do you figure out the fiscal recovery funds in the loss of tax revenue. I spent some time the other day discussing how we are able to draw on recovery plan money. And there's obviously a direct spend, in which case, you know, there, you know, it has to be sort of a specific purpose and all of the responsibilities that go with that. Or one of the categories is replace lost revenue, because the state, local units of government, tribal nations, territories, all have had revenue impact, revenue loss based on changes in the economy, changes in activity due to the public health emergency. The Treasury's challenge was to figure out how to collect that information in a uniform way. You and I, members of the Tax Committee, all are very familiar with the forecast for the state of Minnesota and how we put that together. But that isn't the same way that the state of Wisconsin puts it together, South Dakota. And so the challenge for Treasury was, how do you put it together in a uniform way? They basically gave us specific instructions on how to collect information, which that they are already collecting, to look at it and to estimate what those fiscal recovery funds could be. Those funds are different than that kind of revenue replacement. An amount is different than a direct spend. So, like this slide basically points out, you can't use ARPA money to reduce taxes directly, or at least it enters into the conversation we entered the other day. But certainly, if it's a lost revenue replacement, you know, there's a little bit more latitude on it. So we've gone into that. Chair Nelson asked directly, what was that number? Prior to this week, we assumed that that revenue replacement number would be around $500 million. The lost revenue number would be around $500 million based upon the plain reading of the ARP. We're still trying to figure out what the the actual number is going to be, and I don't think there is a state in the union that knows right now what its number is, but we're pretty confident that that number for that revenue replacement is going to be substantially bigger than $500 million, like multiples of that number. So it is, I think, a opportunity to say, you know, we're able to simplify how we're approaching the ARP. And in these waning days of legislative session, that's a flexible way of going and understanding what we can use for federal funds in the budget discussions. The next slide, it just hits us. There's always more strings attached. I was trying to just get a little bit more in my head even before coming back onto this call, because bottom line is, even with that sort of fairly simple, almost understandable comment, that you can use, that we can draw down some of those revenue replacement funds. There are additional requirements in the bill, in the guidance, that we're also trying to figure out. And just in terms of process, you should know we're consulting with Senate and House fiscal staff. We've shared our assumptions, the data that we're working with them. And at this point, we're still in process trying to understand if we're interpreting it right and bouncing questions both off of each other, as well as the cognizant federal agencies. So the point that I think we're also just trying to work through is that changes in tax revenue have additional strings attached that they cannot, based upon both in year one and in the future. And so there's a kind of a maintenance of effort requirement that the federal government is asking of states. And this is, we're still trying to understand how they're looking at that and how that would affect both the general fund and all of the funds and all of the revenues that we collect that are part of their estimate of revenues that the state raises. So, Mr. Chair, members, we are making some progress in understanding the revenue replacement provisions of the AARP. We're absolutely making progress in collecting some of that data, but we're also still very cognizant that we don't have a firm final answer for you, but we're working through the process so that we have one answer across all bodies, and we'll continue to work towards that. In the meantime, as your chief financial officer, I'm basically also saying we're trying to make it as simple as possible so that the legislature can do its work, so that we at least have understanding what this revenue replacement is. It's probably bigger than, it's a big number. And given that we're going to get two payments, I can tell you for sure that first payment entirely could be a revenue recovery or revenue replacement. So our current estimate is that it's that big. And I'm going to pause for a second, Mr. Chair, members, and see if you followed that, where I lost you, or what other questions you might have.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Showalter. I have a few questions here. So looking at, and again, I appreciate you being here and trying to do as much as you can in a short period of time. On the revenue replacement, with that, I mean, part of that would be government services, if I'm correct, that those federal dollars could be used for government services. And so when we're looking at tax conformity, which is the real big issue for us, and you know, you're looking at anywhere from $600 to $800 million in conformity. If I'm understanding this right, is that with the revenue replacement, you could, and you say it's multiples of $500 million, so I'm assuming it's probably at least $1.5 to $2 billion, mm-hmm. that you could take government services and use federal funding for that, which would free up those dollars in the general fund state budget of $1.6 billion surplus for tax conformity. Is that correct, where you wouldn't directly be using federal funding from ARP for tax conformity, but by freeing up government services that could go for the revenue replacement, you could fill the state dollars in with the tax conformity? I don't know if I explained that right, but you understand what I'm saying there, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, I think that's right. You know, normally this is the kind of work that MMB does with committee staff and fiscal staff as we're getting down to drafting the law, just to make sure we're lining up the resources in the right way. So based on targets, based upon the committee agreements, it's like, are we making sure that we're getting allowable purposes in the right place? That's part of the ambiguity I was referring to the other day. It's like, we want to just make absolutely sure we're pointing it to the right stuff when we get to that bill purposes. So I think the answer is yes, Mr. Chair. The answer is that we have the ability to take funds that are already the state's budget balance and use those for conformity, as an example, without question, particularly in year one. Still trying to understand if there's any year two implications. But for year one, I think that's pretty unambiguous. We can draw down on these flexible revenues to help continue delivering services for Minnesotans, as you say. And ultimately, that package can be balanced and get done what the legislature wants it to do. Yes.
Thank you. I want to move to another area, the de minimis at threshold. And I've seen some numbers on that, $270 million, $280 million. Could you explain what is that exactly, and why is it important for the tax committee? And, I think it plays into maybe non-conformity tax items and what we would be able to have as tax cuts. Would you explain that a little bit more? What is that exactly, that de minimis threshold, and how does it impact what we're doing as a tax conference committee?
Great question, Mr. Chair. Members, this is really at the edge of our understanding and learning today. We understand that there's essentially a maintenance of effort requirement that the federal government is putting on states, and we're trying to understand what's the nature of it. The de minimis provision is essentially a maintenance of effort that we're not cutting our revenues in future years due to the presence of federal funding this year. So that we have to make sure that we continue to do our part in continuing to raise funds and not sort of pushing that to the federal government in some kind of multi-year transfer. How that works gives us a little bit of leeway, and that's that de minimis amount that you referred to, is that they know that there's going to be some changes in revenue, but bottom line, there's a calculation they're going to hold us to. And we're trying to understand how that works, because right now our revenues aren't actually growing that much naturally. So that maintenance of effort figure looks very concerning to us. We want to make sure that we're not, that any kind of conformity or other tax changes would end up tripping that de minimis, suggesting that Minnesota is not doing its part, because we're clearly trying to do our part. I'm going to pause at that. Does that get to your question, Mr. Chair?
So, Commissioner, let's say it is $270 million. Would that mean we could cut taxes to that amount and we would be okay and it wouldn't impact the offset provision if that was the number? Is that over 4 years, 2 years? How many years would that be over?
Mr. Chair, members, that's a great question, and that is what we're trying to understand. We're still trying to understand how this de minimis figure works, whether the 270 or some other number is the right number, and most importantly, how fund specific it is. Because remember, we're not just talking about the general fund anymore. We're talking about multiple sources of revenue as being our revenue base. It's not just general fund. It covers a broader set of categories. And so we're still trying to unpack that. And happy to, as soon as we feel confident we know and we can give you guidance, we will. Right now, I cannot give you that guidance.
And I just have one more question, and I'll turn over to Chair Nelson and other members. So does this ARPA apply to any of our conformity or any conformity actions prior to, March 3rd of 2020? For example, the Further Consolidation Appropriation Act that was passed in December of 2019 that we haven't conformed to yet. Are we under any restrictions on what we do with that, since that was passed prior to kind of this ARPA timeline of March 2020? Moving on.
Mr. Chair, members, great question. I'm not. Committee staff have an idea of the answer to that, I welcome their recommendations. I am not sure how that would interact with this guidance.
So, well, why don't hold on? I'm going to call on Mr. Williams and then, or Mr. Welms, one of the two. So, or even maybe Commission Utility. So, Mr. Williams, go ahead.
Mr. Williams, I'll defer to you instead of Mr. Welms.
Chair Marquardt and members, our names are similar enough that this is confusing. I just note that the language about the offset provision not applying to tax conformity, I've got that in front of me, and it says simply that income tax changes that simply conform with recent changes in federal law, but there's no guidance about what recent changes would include.
All right. So any, Mr. Wilms, anything different from that?
Mr. Chair and committee members, page 86 of the interim final rule, I think has an important paragraph about that. And it kind of sets up a standard that says that changes that are not within the control of the state or territory are not going to be considered covered changes. So I guess I would, you know, share Commissioner Showalter's comments about a lot of this is unclear and still being decided, but it seems to point to a standard that, you know, Treasury is determining that conformity would not be considered within those covered changes due to them being outside of the control. And the statement says that Treasury has determined and previously announced that income tax changes, even those made during the covered period, that simply conform with recent changes in federal law, including those to conform to recent changes in federal taxation of unemployment insurance benefits and taxation of loan forgiveness, are permissible under the offset provision. And so it seems to extend backwards, given that it references the paycheck protection period. But again, we're trying to get clarity just to be absolutely certain.
Right. I mean, it's the before the March of 2020 in that there is one federal act. I know, Commissioner Doty, I saw you kind of turn your video on. Did you have a comment on that, too?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. No, I had a good conversation with Commissioner Showalter yesterday, and that was essentially one of the questions I was asking as well. And so I think what Mr. Wilms has said is something for us to look at closely. So, but no, I don't think we have an answer yet.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I'm going to turn it, Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I just have to, one, take a moment to note the unusual and somewhat welcome position that we're in today. I know, Chair Marquardt, you and I have lived through $4 billion deficits, $6 billion deficit, where there just was not enough money. There just was not enough funding for us to close up our already allocated budget in some cases, or already baseline budget. And what a difference here today in that, yes, our state and its people have had tremendous, heart-wrenching challenges and devastation, both health and economic. But now today we're looking at this additional funding coming in from the federal government. And it's a very different conversation that I have ever seen in my 12, 13 years in the legislature. And I understand we're all trying to figure out how to best use this federal money. And Commissioner Showalter, I just want to thank you again, and Commissioner Doty, for both spending more time with us today. We know you spent several hours with us on Thursday when this latest final interim ruling, interim final ruling came out. And I would like to, with a little bit of just indulgence from Chair Marquardt, I would like to ask if perhaps, if you don't have it today, but maybe you could get it for us, just as we're looking at the totality of the situation where we are today, I can recollect some of the federal funding that has come our way since COVID-19 relief started last year in 2020. I can recall the $1 billion from the federal government for education when I was education chair. And I can recall money for the for our small business grants and of course the and what I am really wondering that would be so helpful, Commissioner Showalter, you probably have it. I just haven't seen it. I would be so helpful to get a listing of those tranches of federal money that have come. I think there's been four large ones now, if my memory serves me right. What those were, like the CARES Act, the Final Budget Reconciliation Act, the ARPA Act. If we could just get a list of those major tranches of federal funds that have come to our state with their amount. We're talking now about the ARPA funds, $2.8 billion. And, you know, how much were the CARES funds? How much was the CAA funds? So it would just be so helpful to have that amount of money. And I'll go out on a limb and my back of the napkin memory and adding it all up without the precision that I know you would have that I really would like to see. You know, I'm thinking it's about $8 billion, but you know, that is just a not an accurate number, but I know you have that or you can. So that would be helpful if we could get that number. If you might already know it today. Do you know that number now, Commissioner Showalter?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Showalter. That's right. I'm the chair today, so go ahead, Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair Nelson, I don't have that number at my fingertips, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it shows up in a number of different places. We've got transparency sites out there talking about, you know, what those funds are and how much they came when we delivered the forecast to you. We, in fact, talked about those federal funds very specifically, and so that packaged up what we knew at that point in time in late February. So we have said that, and even now we're discovering, you know, what are some of those ARP funds. But I mean, your back of the envelope estimate, it seems like in the right ballpark. It's billions and billions, $8 billion is what you said. You know, that's a reasonable estimate simply because the ARP itself in all kinds of different forms of assistance to individuals, to businesses, to local units of government, to state, across the board is many billions in and of itself. So it is an accounting we can certainly put together so that you have it in one place. I think the level of, I just want to add one context piece, which is I think part of the reason why that's there is similar to what, when you were starting at the legislature, Senator, I was at the time the budget director was that in the Great Recession, was that the magnitude of the GDP loss, the magnitude of the impact on jobs and revenue is actually even bigger than that one. Mm-hmm. And so what we're seeing is basically the federal government learning its lesson from that time and trying to step in with significant resources so that our actions don't exacerbate the problem, that our actions don't concentrate the hurt and on families and kids. And so we're seeing that quick action, hopefully helping us out of this downturn a lot faster than what we experienced more than a decade ago.
And Commissioner, as you put that information together, could you also indicate how much is one time versus how much is ongoing, if you could, in the last 2 years? That'd be important too.
Senator
Nelson.
Yeah, just to follow up, Mr. Chair, thank you so much for that added piece. And so Commissioner Showalter, so we will be having the gavel on Saturday, tomorrow, and we will be having a hearing, a short hearing, and I would be asking these type of questions, which is looking at this full array of funding to our state from the federal governor, from the federal government. That would be incredibly helpful if you could pull that together for us in a concise manner, but with those important things that I'd like Chair Marquardt mentioned, which is, you know, is it one-time money? And, you know, the dates, it can just a grant would be incredibly helpful and broad uses. So that would be really helpful for us as we go forward. And so my question then, and thank you for entertaining that. And so my question to your testimony, and I do want to make sure I understand, Commissioner. So the lost revenue number, maybe plus the de minimis number, but at least the lost revenue number as it's being calculated, is the amount of lost revenue to the state that means if there were any type of tax revenue reductions, they would not be considered part of those covered deductions or those clawbacks, which is what I think I understood. Is that am I correct on that, Commissioner?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, that's my understanding. I certainly think that there's this notion of safe harbor. You know, what is that? And defining that is something we don't know yet. We're trying to get our hands around. I described what, you know, we're thinking right now, but that is exactly the kind of work that we need to get through so that we can get you more information and more understanding of it.
Thank you. And just follow, Mr. Chair. And so, Commissioner, thank you so much. And so what we're really, you know, but it seems that at the minimum, you said 500 million, but in multiples of that, maybe up to 1.4 billion, which is half of the ARPA money. I mean, there are significant opportunities for Minnesota in this case to conform to, and the conformity isn't even part of that amount that we could use lost revenue for. So that's in addition to, so the conformity issues wouldn't even count towards what was the maximum allowed under lost revenue. And so my questions is, it seems from what I think I understand from what you're saying and what I've read from the most recent report, is that Minnesota would have the ability, I'm not saying we are, but we would have the ability to, for example, fully conform to the federal conformity that is post-TCJA, which is, I think, is $831 million. And then if we were looking at not going over a lost revenue number, that amount would be about anywhere between $500 million and $1.4 billion. So a pretty large, you know, span there. So my point is, it looks to me like there are significant abilities and opportunities for our state to use these federal funds to conform to federal tax law in broad strokes.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I agree. In broad strokes, that we have, we appear to have some flexibility based upon the interim final guidance or whatever the wonderful phrase that they used with this set of guidance. The specifics are absolutely things that we're trying to understand. I think one element that you're struggling with and I'm certainly struggling with is I don't know that there's necessarily a link between that revenue replacement provision and that sort of tax conformity / tax cuts. So I'm not sure if there is even a link between those two concepts. And that's why I think we're all now starting to talk in halting terms, because there's multiple factors that we're trying to balance at the same time.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, it seems, yes, the revenue loss, the revenue recapture is maybe a little bit murky. I totally agree. But it does seem very, very clear that the ability to conform to federal tax law without risking any type of recoupment or any type of clawback is clear. And so So we are very, we're all on the same page about that. Is that right, Commissioner? That's very clear.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I think it is clear that we have flexibility, and as a state setting budget targets, budget, you know, figuring out how we're going to use the resources of the about $1.6 billion that we have in the bottom line currently, plus the additional money that's available from the ARP, I think gives us a lot of flexibility to meet those conformity needs or other needs of the state.
Thank you, Commissioner. And then thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question, and Commissioner Showalter, this can just be a preview for tomorrow. So if it's something that can't be answered today, I definitely understand. But I do want to give you some time to think about it and look into that a little bit. So of the ARPA money, we've been talking about the state fiscal recovery fund, particularly in this committee. But that's only a portion of that ARPA funding. There's a lot of there's other elements of that ARPA funding. And particularly, our committee, I think, has done, our conference committee here, if you look at both the House bill and the Senate bill and the tax committee, we have really done some good work on focusing on affordable housing, which we know has been a significant issue before the pandemic and has only grown in importance and need since then. So we have a couple broad proposals. One is a 4D proposal, which I think you might be familiar with. And I'm wondering how federal funds might be used to facilitate that 4D proposal in a way that would not end up in a property tax shift. I have some ideas, but they're very rough. But I know you and your team might be able to think of something there. And then the other piece is the affordable housing tax credit. And how might those two important affordable housing pieces fit into some of either the ARPA housing funds, affordable housing funds, which are significant, or some of the previous money that has come this way as well? So just something to think about. And if you have an answer now, fine, but otherwise we can talk about it tomorrow.
Commissioner Showalter, anything on the 4D or the affordable housing tax credit and how that might play into ARPA?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, great questions. I just think if that's sort of a line of questioning you want to get into tomorrow, it might be more effective to also invite or instead invite that Minnesota Housing to discuss that, because I think each of the cognizant agencies is getting deep into understanding how their funding streams work within the ARP. And while MNB tries to know a lot, can't know everything, we work and depend on that expertise. And so if you're looking into specific programs and how they work with federal funds, I think they would be a great resource.
Thank you, Commissioner. That's a brilliant idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a lot of what I was thinking in my head has already been asked, but just to clarify again, the tax conformity piece beyond PPP and UI, the House bill has more of the basic conformity that we've put in place. And I know on page 86, that definition around recent changes to tax conformity, how recent can they be? Can that go back to, you know, TCGA, or is that still unclear? Because we do have a lot of good conformity pieces in the House bill that are beyond just PPP and UI.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, that's a great question, and it is still unclear. I think that is kind of that these are conformities that aren't called out in some of the guidance. What is recent? What is under the legislature's control right now? I think these are good questions. I do not have a clear answer.
Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then also, I was also thinking along the lines of Chair Nelson when it came to affordable housing and some of the work we're doing too. If you on the directions on, oh gosh, like from page 38 all the way to 41 around affordable housing and education pieces. I really liked what Chair Marquardt said about making sure we understand what is permanent funding and what's one-time funding. It would be a little worrisome to be putting money towards things that would be ongoing, like the 4D program is actually a change in tax rate that's going to be there forever, and so is the shift. So looking at what's one-time and what's ongoing. One thing that's in the House bill that seems to fit into this bucket, maybe we can talk about that tomorrow too, is the student homelessness credit we have, not credit. Chair Marquardt might need to help me out here. My brain isn't totally working on full speed today.
Well, our affordable housing. County aid.
I know that Representative Gomez is student homelessness, which seems to fit into that bucket around homelessness and our education piece, specifically for COVID. So, looking at that, but then also, once again, keeping cognizant of what type of programming you're putting in place that's going to be ongoing and what type of programming spurs that. Now, they specifically call out here on that page on 38, construction of affordable housing units, like immediate construction, which would definitely be one time. It's not like a credit that goes on in perpetuity. So, thinking about stuff like that and trying to delineate that, it'd be interesting to see what that intermix is with housing and education as well.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Thank you. Did you have a question?
No, it wasn't a question. Okay. It was more processing out
That's
loud
what I thought.
And,
yep.
and trying to see the connection there. But really, back to that first question too, around what is recent conformity?
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of good conformity pieces in the House bill.
So I think we have to figure that out yet. What does recent mean? You're right. So thank you. Any other questions for Commissioner Showalter?
One more.
Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, Commissioner, I think I saw that our most recent state revenues were about $560 million over forecast for the last month. It seems like we are getting about $500 million over forecast. At least for the last few months, do you happen to have some insight on that? And really tell me, too, if my numbers are correct. I'm just speaking from memory here.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, you're off.
Okay.
I'm seeing if I can look it up even as we do it. You are absolutely right. 2 months ago, our monthly revenue number was great. It was more than $500 million to the good. The most recent one was less exciting. Issued May 10th. I'm trying to pull it up. Not getting it. So whatever. It came in a couple hundred million dollars, or I think it was $150 million to the bad. What essentially we learned. This is kind of a punchline. We learned that if we don't collect taxes on April 15th, it affects when people pay taxes.
Sure.
So what we I really saw was a significant shift in tax receipts. We're looking – each of these is basically literally saying what has been counted in Commissioner Doty's shop. So we expect next month that we'll get positive numbers. But certainly for the most recent month, it was not positive news. Overall, we are continuing to see the economy provide the revenues coming off the economy is continue to look positive to forecast, that our corporate revenues continue to be positive, and our sales tax numbers are solid.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, thank you so much. So the trend has been positive as far as exceeding our forecasts, our projections in revenue. But of course, yes, if we don't collect taxes on April 15th, that does seem to make a big dent in the state coffers. So definitely understand that. But is it typically, though, the trend has been positive as far as exceeding a budget forecast? Is that... somewhat accurate.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, given that we only have a couple data points, I hesitate to use the word trend. Right now, the number is positive, absolutely, and we're happy with it. I think the overall, the economic activity right now is favorable to what we were anticipated in the forecast. But, you know, as Dr. Colin Bakitis puts in every single monthly revenue statement, you know, each one tends to have high level of variability. That's why we sort of wrap them all up into a couple of forecasts. So I'm not going to say trend, but right now we're running above forecast.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, last comment. I just want, you know, it just does bear a calling out, really, to the resiliency of Minnesotans. You know, we have been through a heck of a year, and I am so really so pleased with how Minnesotans have, you know, garnered their fortitude and continued to move forward in challenging economic times. And I think it says a lot about the strength, really, of our people. And I think I just feel like we need to do a call out to those businesses that stayed open and those employees that continued to work and, of course, have continued to invest in our economies through this time. So I do think brighter days are ahead, and we are looking behind. We're looking in the rearview mirror of the pandemic and the economic upheaval that came with that. So I think it's good news ahead, sunny sailing ahead, and I look forward to further reports from you, Commissioner, as we move forward in that area.
So thank you, Madam Chair. And I do think the economic numbers have been unusual because I think they really are deceiving, because what you don't kind of see just when you look at the numbers is the great disparity of how this COVID-19 has hit certain individuals and certain businesses. I mean, we know the service industry was probably hit harder than anyone else. We know that the poorer you were entering into COVID-19, the harder you were hit. And so it does kind of, these good numbers, while they're good, they do disguise the real disparity in people who really got hit hard. And you know, you were poor, you were a minority, you got hit harder during COVID-19. And so that's why, you know, and I know both of our bills are trying to kind of help everyone, you know, help those that really got hit, you know, get to that point where they're self-sustaining. So, but I appreciate those comments.
And Mr. Chair, just to add one other. Yeah, just to add one other group, because it's a near and dear to my heart and personal, our performing Minnesotans had all of their performances canceled during COVID, whether they were musicians, actors, artists. It was very, very hard on our arts community this year. Those people who make a living doing that particularly has been challenging. So
absolutely. Yes,
you're right, Mr. Chair. There's been great disparity in how COVID has affected different Minnesotans.
Thank you. Sandra Rest, I saw your hand up at one time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the course of his remarks, Commissioner Showalter answered my question.
Very good. Well, Commissioner Showalter, a huge thank you for being here today, and always makes it clarify some things. And it's, you know, we're finding out more information every day, but I really, really appreciate your availability and being open and accessible to the committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Next, I'd like to move to Commissioner Doty, Department of Revenue, to talk about 2021 tax filing. Commissioner Doty, welcome to the committee. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Marquardt, Chair Nelson, and members of the committee, again, thank you for having me here today and for the opportunity to provide an update on this year's tax filing season. As we all know, this year has been challenging for many Minnesotans, and the department has worked diligently to provide services to our diverse customer base, including individuals, businesses, and counties. We strive to meet our customers' needs through efficient and effective tax administration, providing high-quality customer service to Minnesota taxpayers, and a commitment to continuous improvement. The tax filing season has been unique, to be sure, and I wanted to provide you with some tax filing updates. As of Wednesday, May 12th, the department had received over 2.4 million tax returns from Minnesotans and issued about 1.5 million refunds. We have processed almost 95% of the returns we have received. This amounts to more than 2.2 million returns. For those Minnesotans who have submitted their 2020 tax returns, 94% have chosen to file electronically and 6% with paper filing. The department also works to deliver an efficient and timely refund to customers. Of those Minnesotans that filed a return electronically, the department averaged 11 to 12 days to issue the refund. Of those that filed with a paper return, the department averaged about 25 days to issue the refund. As committee members know, the department also issued a rapid and timely decision to follow the IRS's determination, which came out in mid-March, to allow a grace period for Minnesota individual income tax returns, thus providing them until May 17, 2021, to file their income tax returns and make payments without penalty or interest. In any event, it is not unusual for the department to see a rush of returns in the last couple days of filing season, regardless of potential changes. As we consider how to implement any changes that are enacted as part of this year's tax bill, we will gather information from our partners in this work, CPAs, the state bar, nonprofits, including providers of our VITA programs and other tax professionals. In the case of provisions that cover previous tax years or the current filing season, we will prepare to implement any changes as quickly as possible. However, this will take a couple of weeks, and some of this work will not be able to be completed automatically. We will work with software vendors to update their systems to incorporate any changes and communicate with taxpayers. Some of these changes will be made as part of our regular annual change process for tax year 2021. This includes synthesizing tax law changes, publishing forms and testing software, and opening the filing season at the same time as the IRS in 2021. Throughout this process, we will engage with stakeholders to learn about topics of interest and address as many of them as possible throughout the implementation process. Once again, the Department of Revenue recognizes this filing season has looked different for many Minnesotans, but it has gone smoothly, and we remain ready to continue our assistance and support for customers to provide efficient and effective tax administration and high-quality customer service. So with that, Mr. Chair, I thank you, and would be open to any questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Doty. So if I might ask, so May 17th is certainly a few days away, and folks who have filed prior to May 17th, mm-hmm. and, you know, we know we've got a lot of conformity on the table, yep. and that conformity gets completed, Paycheck Protection Program, unemployment insurance, other important tax conformity, like conformity to the SBA loans, EIDL loans, shuttered venue grants, and so forth. Yeah. How is that going to be handled by the Department of Revenue? Is it going to be amended returns, or how would that be handled?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. That's a great question. So we clearly, we are going to, as we always have tried to do, is we will try to adjust as many of those returns as we can automatically, okay? But there will be a significant number of those that we will not be able to adjust automatically. And quite frankly, that will depend on the complexity of the return. as well as the complexity of quite frankly, the tax bill that is passed, because we will need to, once something actually is passed, we will then need to update our systems so that we could address what has been passed and the specifics of that tax bill. So we will, and once we know what has been passed, one of the things that we will do is, along with updating our systems, is that we will also then start to be able to communicate directly with taxpayers and start to provide some information in terms of, if your tax return includes A, B, or C, for instance, then this is something that you may need to think about amending. But if it includes A, just simply A or B or whatever, we would be able to automatically update that for you. And then also at that point, trying to give some indication of how long it would take us to do that. But right now, we just don't have that information to be able to do that. But overall, to answer your question, is that, as we have done in years past, there will be a percentage of those returns that come in that we will be able to automatically update and provide those refunds to Minnesota taxpayers.
Yeah, thank you very much, Commissioner. So some you can adjust, some you're going to have to go in there and dig into. So I know on unemployment insurance, I think it's Form 1099. Is that where that kind of that miscellaneous income?
Yep.
And do you know, I hear that there is not a separation of the federal unemployment insurance from the state unemployment insurance. There's just one number there. Correct. Would that impact the complexity of whether or not it could be adjusted versus, having to dig into it, Commissioner Doty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. Absolutely. One of the things is that, as you said, our system does not specifically distinguish between that federal unemployment, like the $600, for instance, from the unemployment that was received from the state as a whole. So yes, depending on what is passed and what the overall tax bill looks like, that will have a definite impact on our ability to automatically adjust those things.
Okay, thank you. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think most of my questions have been addressed. I just want to thank the commissioner, and I know this has got to be incredibly frustrating. And nice. I did, we all can get about anywhere we need to get. We just need to know where we're going. We just need to know,
right.
Then we can get the route. And that is the challenge. And I know we're all kind of feeling that. But the one thing I would just mention, and
Tyler
asked most of my questions. My one question is, the one thing that we know is that Minnesotans are incredibly forgiving and incredibly flexible. If they know, it's the one thing that Minnesotans that we just need to know. And so as things go forward, Commissioner, I just think it'll be, I know you communicate well anyway, but so important. Like, people need to know, all right, we're going to be in session here on Monday, May 17th, the last day, our constitutionally required deadline. We don't have joint budget targets yet. So even if they magically appeared while we're sitting here in this conference committee, it's just a physical impossibility that all of those budget bills would get printed to the revisers, printed, and so that we could vote on them on Monday. So we know that we're going to be going into a special session, and yet people's taxes are due on Monday, the 17th. Yeah. And I just fear there's going to be great angst across the land because people don't know what to do. What are their options? Now, if they're working with CPAs, their CPAs can help guide them through that. But what about Minnesotans that aren't working with CPAs? What about the multitude of Minnesotans that do their own taxes. We know it's getting harder and harder to do that, but we do have Minnesotans who do that. And we also have wonderful volunteers who volunteer and help other Minnesotans with their tax preparation. And so is there any guidance about, I mean, very broadly, because every case is so different, right, about May 17th?
Senator Nelson, great question. Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Chair Nelson, that is a great question, and we've been looking at this very closely for the last several weeks now as we start to approach May 17th, and you know, I think that, you know, we will be putting out some kind of general guidance as we get closer to for Monday, quite candidly, but I think that in general, because we just won't know, we are going to probably at that point just ask people to file your return as you have it, and with the with the expectation that you may be having to amend that return, given whatever is passed and wherever we end up having to however we have to address that, but we will be providing some general guidance on that. But as you so adequately said, we just don't know, and every return is very different. And this includes both for individuals as well as for businesses. And so we will be providing general guidance. There will always be guidance on our website that can be of assistance as well. The other thing that we've been talking about is trying to come up with ways, suggestions, if you will, for those individuals who aren't able to use a CPA or a tax firm or whatever, because, I mean, they're really concerned about that. A lot of people who file amended returns do it via paper. And so it is a great question, and it's a great concern, and we are well aware of that. And so we will be providing, like I said, as general knowledge as we can on that.
Thank you. And
Senator Nelson.
Final comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I think that probably, I know I would like to get that information, and I bet the other 200 legislators would too, because our inboxes are going to fill up. Our constituents are going to reach out to their elected officials and say, yep, what do we do? And so that will be really helpful. But if I understood you right, you're the very broadest of strokes is file your taxes by the deadline on May 17th, and likely you will need to do an amended return. And one final question then, is there an additional cost to Minnesotans to do an amended return?
Commissioner Doty.
There should be no additional cost to do an amended return.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to ask for some things to be repeated, just because it is getting extremely complicated, and I want to make sure that I understood Commissioner Doty's points. So Taxpayer 1 filed his taxes on April 20th and had a federal obligation and a Minnesota refund. So he's going to be affected by the changes that the Minnesota legislature makes, if any, to his 2020 return. So you're saying, I thought I heard you say that you would even look at that, or first of all, number one, will you send that refund out?
Commissioner Doty.
In a timely fashion? Which if he filed April 20th, it already ought to be in his bank account.
Commissioner Doty.
Yep, Mr. Chair, Senator Rest. If a return has been filed, and irregardless of the other circumstances, as you're suggesting, mm-hmm, then yes, I believe we would send that refund out as per the return.
And if the
can, excuse me, Senator Rest.
Thank you. And so, for this taxpayer, if then they had some unemployment compensation that is going to be addressed by the legislature or some other thing mm-hmm. that would affect his return, it's up to him to file an amended return, and up to him to find out what possible things, changes would benefit him in terms of filing a, he has to learn what it is that would affect him and then file an amended return because the department has limited resources to be able to figure that out and send him, for example, an additional refund. That will not happen. If you do not ask for the additional refund, you're not going to get it. Is that correct?
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ress, we're dealing in a lot of what ifs, but I will say this, that first of all, as I said earlier, we will try to automatically address some of these changes as best we can. And we will also be providing information as to what kinds of changes would constitute our ability to be able to do that and to how long that would take, okay? This taxpayer that we're hypothetically speaking of, mm-hmm. I don't know where that would land, quite frankly. They're depending on everything else that they've got or whatever. Maybe this ends up being one that we could automatically adjust.
But Mr. Chairman,
but it may or may not be that as well.
But Senator Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Doty, we need to make sure that our taxpayers know that it is their responsibility. If they have already filed the return, they already paid whatever they needed to pay on the federal return or gotten a refund, but let's say they had to pay there because that's often the case. Yeah, people pay on the feds and they get a Minnesota refund. Yeah. They would have how long a period to amend their return? Once they find out is it 2.5 years that you have to amend this year's return to reflect any kind of changes affecting 2020?
Sure. Commissioner Doty.
Yes, I believe that's correct. And again, we would be providing as much information as possible to taxpayers to help them through that. And by the way, it's 3.5 years, just to be clear. But we would be providing as much information as possible. So I don't want to come out and say that taxpayers are all on your own, because I do think we will be providing a lot of information to assist. But yeah, I think in some cases, I mean, taxpayers are going to have to make a decision, unfortunately, of do I amend or do I not? Do I extend or do I not or whatever? Those will be some decisions that taxpayers will have to make. And some of that will be personal based on, you know, for instance, how quickly do I need my refund? Am I able to wait, for instance, things like that? How complicated have we determined your return is? Those will be all parts of this as well. But we will try to provide as much information as possible to taxpayers.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you, because I think I agree with Chair Nelson and you, Representative Marquardt, that we are going to be hearing from our constituents in this. And in the past, Commissioner Doty, when there has been a big change in tax law, particularly around the filing time. I mean, a lot of people just file extensions, you know, and just going to wait until October, you know, get the government out of my way and I'll just file based on that. And I only have to be concerned that I have paid what I owe. Yeah. But we have often had public service announcements. We've had advice going out, not just to CPAs, but to ordinary people, taking out advertisements in the newspaper. Here's what you have to look for, et cetera. And that costs money. And so I was wondering if in anticipation of that, because looks like we won't get this bill finished until June, or at least not voted on. We might get it finished, but not voted on. What kind of budget will you be asking the Tax Conference Committee to give you for that? And I don't want to call it a PR, but campaign, but it is an information campaign, certainly. What's that gonna cost? Have you looked at that? Do you have an estimate about what it might be? Because I think it for those of us, and all of us, I think, reach out to our constituents either weekly or end of session, and it would really be great if we could have specific information that we can direct our constituents to when they're writing to us on May 17th, asking us, now what? What should I do? And of course, we can't give them legal advice or tax advice, but we should be able to direct them through some sort of link if they're writing to us through email. Which I think is common enough, we can assume that. But I am worried about where do I send them, and are you ready with advice on current law that does not anticipate any changes made to the Minnesota statutes before June? Where am I going to send them? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Russ, great points, great questions. I've not estimated like any kind of a PR related kind of a budget or whatever. I am committed to making sure that we will get information out, and we will even make sure that that the legislature receives that specifically in one sense too, so that those people can be directed. And I will say that one of the things that we will include in that information will be a directing people to our website. Our website truly is one of the best ways to get ongoing information regarding the tax filing season and a lot of other tax related information. So we will be doing that. We also will be we've already putting other information out there. I know one of our assistant commissioners has been interviewed and kind of, again, trying to help get information out there in a more general sense in terms of advice and tips. We'll be continuing to do some of that, but we will get as much information as we can out to taxpayers and through a variety of mechanisms. And some of that will also be through our partners, so the CPAs, the bar. We'll be using them. We've got a big list, listserv of organizations that will help us get that information out as well. So we will be using a variety of sources.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Senator Chairman. Rest. It's really, I don't think we can stress how important it is. Commissioner Doty, and
sure.
And it has to be widespread and easily available because you might get the complaints, but so will we. And one of the major complaints will be, why didn't you get your work done on time? We all have to answer that question, and it's not an easy one to answer this year.
But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rest. And you know, you go back to 2019 when we did some major tax reform, you know, doubling the standard deduction or rate cut. I mean, just a number of conformity items. And that was certainly done in late May also, which created a lot of work for the Department of Revenue. So, you know, it's the timing is never perfect, unfortunately. Kind of the way the session goes with the tax deadlines, and also, you know, you've got schools, for example, that are waiting to figure out what their funding are, and they, you know, in April they've got to lay off teachers. If they, I mean, it just doesn't work. So I, Commissioner Doty, you know, thank you. This is good information, and I echo what Senator Nelson and Senator Rest have said. You know, it's just, we're going to get a lot of questions, and the smoother you can make it and the easier and get that information out, the taxpayer is going to be very, very valuable. So Commissioner Doty, thank you so much for your time and, again, for your accessibility to this committee. You're always there at a moment's notice, and I and this committee really appreciates that. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, members, that concludes our agenda today. So I'm going to turn it over to Chair Nelson if you want to give us a little update on what we can expect coming into the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you and I are hoping that our future holds some global budget targets so we can all be working towards that same pocketbook issue. And but while we don't have those, we do hope and believe they're coming, and I know that you're working with House leadership, Chair Marquardt. I'm working with Senate leadership. We're all working to try and get to that point. But until then, tomorrow, the Senate will have the gavel. Interesting, the Senate gets the gavel on Saturdays. So maybe not making a lot of friends here, but we do need to meet. We do need to meet tomorrow. We'll have a conference committee at 1 o'clock. There could be breaking news. We don't know. We certainly would like to see that. And also, though, there are just a few other issues that I mentioned earlier today. We'll hopefully from Commissioner Showalter, we'll get that full accounting of federal funds that have come into our state, you know, since the COVID relief started. And then also, there's a few other issues that I'm just kind of reviewing to make sure Chair Marquardt, issues that we either both have our committees have had an interest in, or they may be in one or the other, but there's certainly some interest in looking at that. So we'll probably have a few additional issues as well, but we definitely will get the overall aid from the federal government. We'll take a look at that. And we'll also be asking if the Minnesota Housing Finance can come in and help us with this one piece that which is using some of those federal funds for affordable housing. It's the House and Senate Tax Committees, both bills have addressed that. And interestingly enough, in a way that pretty much works together, I think, to really help address that issue. And it'll be important if we can hear from the Minnesota Housing Finance on what might be possible with some of those federal dollars. And now, of course, we have not had confirmation from those folks yet, but that's what my intention would be, to see if we could get Commissioner Showalter and the Minnesota Housing Finance lead in as well.
Chair Nelson, I look forward to that tomorrow. Thank you so much. Members and staff, thank you for your work today and throughout this conference committee. With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.